All right. Welcome to Keeping Pace with Cyberspace. I'm your host, Lucas Ashbaugh. And this past week, we saw a lot to do, or at least peripherally, with data localization laws. So I figured this week we should dive more in depth about that. So if we see anything in the future, maybe we can have a deeper discussion on it. So without further ado, this week is about data localization. So last week we saw the United States versus Microsoft and also the Chinese iCloud private keys being moved to China, or rather being moved to China and administered by the state-owned, I'll try to pronounce this, Guizhou Cloud Big Data Administration. And while both of these topics would make interesting episodes in their own right, I figure it's important I cover the basic topics on data localization first and then maybe in the future. So data localization, maybe I can say it clearly once, data localization is when governments require businesses to store data within their sovereign territory. And while that might sound initially kind of benign or even boring, it's actually a huge deal. Kind of like financial records for banks. Maybe you can think of like the old-fashioned Swiss bank account. Specifically, where data is stored matters. When a user hops onto a popular application, of course, I'm simplifying this process a lot here, so don't take this as a networking lesson, but they access data that's usually stored in a data warehouse. Often, accessing that data requires crossing international borders, maybe on the other side of the world. Not always, though. Anyways, this data is sent back to the user's device so the user can, as the name implies, use it. Importantly, though, if the data warehouse is in a sovereign government's territory, they can use whatever legal system they use in that government, in that country, which sometimes is not very strong, to request information and data. This request, like any law, is backed by the government, which has a monopoly on the use of violence, and therefore governments need to comply. So maybe we can have a hypothetical example here, right? If you're running a social media company, let's use email because that's happened in the past that I can think of. If you're running an email company and a few people are emailing about a topic that's censored by the government, we'll say democratic rights, and the government decides that they deem those individuals an enemy of the state or at least punishable by law to some extent for going against the law that censors that type of speech, they can compel companies to provide that information. So this is hard for companies in a few ways. First off, they have to do things that go against their values. Often, I should say, not always. Such as this week when Apple essentially gave the Chinese government access to iCloud accounts for Chinese users only. Right? So usually what has historically happened is the private keys to iCloud accounts were stored in the U.S., and if anyone wanted more information to access those accounts, they would have to go through the U.S. judicial system, which is pretty stringent in allowing you access, or at least is supposed to be. Now, these private accounts, because of a Chinese data localization law, these private keys have to be stored in China and administered, or at least partly, by a Chinese company, which is, I believe it's state-owned. So anyways, long story short, the Chinese government can more or less just pop open any Chinese citizen's iCloud account now. So that, well, yeah, you might have protection from criminals, you don't have protection from the government, which is a big deal in an autocratic regime. But building off of this, if companies don't want to comply, which many times they don't, their usual only other option is to resist and face legal action and most likely get booted from the country. And especially, again, I'll bring up China. In the case of China, this is really difficult because they have such a huge market. So if you're trying to be a competitive business and give profit back to your stakeholders and grow, it's hard to ignore the Chinese market. We've seen some companies like Google pulled out, and that's its own discussion in itself a few years back, and it's since kind of coming back and doing joint research projects. We've seen Microsoft and Cisco have some hard times with stuff like this as well. And this isn't just data on users. This is also proprietary information data, right? So the Chinese government might say, we need you to hold your intellectual property to some extent here. And what's underlying that is, well, we're going to snoop at it while it's here. And so that can be a hard debate for companies as well. Hosting all of a company's data in a country just might not be very efficient. That's another concern here. For example, if the Philippines, and this isn't an actual, I don't know if this is an actual law, this is hypothetical, but we'll say the Philippines requires all companies' users' data to be hosted domestically, well, multinational organization might not be interested in serving, say, their European users' data all the way from the Philippines. Data travels fast, but it travels faster when it's closer. So instead, companies face a few options. One is they just make another data center that holds duplicate information to abide legally by the government's laws. So in either case here, you're either running more equipment than you would need to otherwise, or you are trying to extend your network to accommodate all of these legal situations, which is inefficient and costly. So a case that we've seen here recently is the United States versus Microsoft case. And this more has data localization implications than in itself, but it is a related debate. So different countries might have conflicting interests. Sovereignties or laws might not match up, which is really hard for a multinational organization. In this specific instance, the United States is trying to compel Microsoft to hand over data on a U.S. citizen, which is stored in Ireland. The United States has deemed it a national security interest, or at least a legal interest, to obtain this drug trafficker's information. But do they have jurisdiction in Ireland? So there's a few ways to look at this, and kind of the center of the argument is that, well, the U.S. government has the power to subpoena physical assets and bank accounts and then just obtain a warrant once it's in their custody. But at the same time, the access to this data is so immediate that it's almost more like just a warrant and marching in, and they don't have jurisdiction in Ireland. So that case is still ongoing, but it demonstrates a conflict here. Maybe I can give another just random example. Let's say that your data is contained in Serbia, and the government arbitrarily decided it was in their national security interest to thumb through it. Your privacy has now been violated, but the U.S. company that is holding your data in this hypothetical Serbia situation may be operating there without the power to do anything about it. So it becomes a concern for you, even though you're not in that country. And then there's another kind of part of this too, where companies will argue that by them pulling out of a country, that they're actually potentially leaving potential customers worse off. This is, I guess it really depends how you want to view it, right? It could also kind of be seen as just trying to legitimize looking the other way. I believe I saw Apple with this statement a bit ago saying that, well, we could refuse to comply with the Chinese government, but then they're not going to have any near security options to that, and they're just going to be fully worse off. So we'd rather give them the partial security that we can offer while still being legal with the Chinese government. You know, that's an interesting moral argument. Depends on how you want to look at it. So with all this in mind, it's easy to say that many regimes that like tight control view the physical location of data storage as a direct either addition or subtraction from their power as a government. So some more famous examples. Russia and China and many others have their own forms of data localization or just bulk collection and retention in general. However, many liberal democracies have been trying to make it a diplomatic priority, a foreign policy priority in the cyberspace realm to push back against this. Interestingly, in the U.S.'s Trans-Pacific Partnership, I shouldn't just say the U.S., in the entire Trans-Pacific Partnership, but it was kind of championed by the U.S., the TPP, there were actually clauses signing governments to not impose data localization, which was cool, great. But at the same time, as it's kind of hard not to do this, it defined that governments could still do localization for things they require a national security interest. And that was really criticized because it's so broad that governments can kind of just take advantage of that however they like, which probably would have happened. But it could have been an interesting first step. But either way, got thrown in the trash, so doesn't matter. Now, while I mentioned many liberal democracies are pushing for this as a priority to fight against data localization, I should really be clear that they are still pretty loosely mixed around just to what extent. There's really a spectrum of what they do find acceptable and what they don't, and disagreement amongst themselves. Kind of an example here would be Argentina and the EU have data laws saying that you can't store data abroad in countries where it isn't adequately protected. And that type of clause where you see that in international law isn't always really well defined, even by the government making that statement. So that can be really interesting. So that's saying, well, you have to host it here if we don't trust where you would host it. The U.S. Department of Defense also requires that all data has, or contractors' data, things relating to their functionality, be stored locally. And many states and municipalities kind of have their own kind of hodgepodges going on as well. So it's clear that, you know, in this gradient, there's somewhere in there that they find an acceptable amount of localization. Most governments seem to suggest that they require business records or processing of transactions to be done domestically. And that seems like a pretty direct security concern. That's usually the more minimum that governments are willing to give up, or I should say the minimum they're willing to keep, right? So they're willing to give a lot, but they want that. A step further, I'll give an example. Romania has like a specific law pertaining to online gambling that has to be locally stored or locally done. Yet there's a clear point where the heavier hand is really started to be felt, right? So we saw Poland actually tried to enact a law to store e-commerce customers' data locally. Luckily, or I guess it depends on how you view the situation, the EU actually contested and overturned that. They said, no, that's a little too much to what you're forcing businesses to do. Maybe if we go a step further with the heavy hand, Kazakhstan actually requires all .kz domains, right? So you might see like a .com, a .org. If you see .kz, which is their state, you know, Kazakhstan domain, they have to be hosted domestically. And for company owners who collect personal data, Kazakhstan company owners, obviously, they have to keep that domestically as well. There's some fuzziness in these laws, as you can kind of discern through me describing them, right? These aren't terribly well defined in every instance. And then we can go over to Russia, and they just require very heavy that data operators who collect personal data about Russian citizens must record, systemize, accumulate, store, update, retrieve, blah, 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 data using databases physically located in Russia. So they really want a lot there. So that's kind of a spectrum of countries around the world. Specifically, with a lot of the countries that were going to be involved in the TPP, there are data localization policies that are really kind of a thorn in the side to the United States and other larger liberal democracies trying to trade with them. But I'll stop spitting out different instances. But the point here is that different countries have different levels of localization, right? This is a broad and very fuzzy spectrum. They have different levels of legality of which they are willing to pursue localization or willing to oppose it themselves. But they also have different laws depending on how much they're allowing their companies to interact with other governments and other countries that have localization laws. This is a very big, fuzzy web of data storage issues. I guess sometimes I try to list three takeaways. I think this time I'm just going to do one. The one big takeaway you should have this episode is data doesn't just magically float around in some mystical internet world, right? It's stored in a physical location somewhere, and it's maintained by a law-abiding company. This has very serious privacy and e-commerce impacts around the globe. And I think that's probably going to be it for today. But as far as the Ashma anecdote goes, I actually have a fun story. So long story short, I was walking down the street late at night the other night, and some lady was walking her dog next to me, and her little chihuahua got loose. And, oh, man, this thing was awful. I waited because I didn't want to, like, get it all excited or scared and then get it to run further, but it just kept sprinting. And this is in New York City at the moment, so it can only go so far before you just lose it. After I saw the dog was about to turn the corner, I asked the lady, "Do you want me to sprint after your dog?" She said yes. She was frantic. I sprinted after this dog for like 8 blocks at as fast as I can run. It was very exhausting going uphill, and this thing is weaving in and out of the trash heaps that sit on the side of the curb, and it's dark, so it's pretty hard to see a chihuahua already, right? And I felt terrible. I lost sight of it, and that was that. So didn't catch the dog. The lady was pretty frantic. I felt awful. I hope it had like a microchip or something, but other than that, it'll probably die. Anyways, thanks for listening. This has been episode 9 of Keeping Pace with Cyberspace. You can find us on Facebook by searching Keeping Pace with Cyberspace or on Twitter at KPW Cyberspace. We're on Stitcher, iTunes, and the Google Play Store, all of your favorite podcasting apps. Feel free to give feedback, tell all of your friends about how great the show is, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Oh, and I owe the listeners an apology. There's construction work going on my window outside. So last week I had to skip recording due to heavy power drills and equipment. Apologies. We're back on schedule, though. Have a good one.